along with Paul Bissonnette.
Hey, how are you? 1, 2, 3, check. 1, 2, mic. Can you hear me? Do you have my levels? You want these levels?
I'm suddenly feeling very sultry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
It's the podcast grotto. We're ready to rock. You guys all set? Welcome to a bonus edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Jeff Merrick alongside Elliot Friedman. This week, our conversation from last week, Elliot, with Paul Bissonnette of the Arizona Coyotes, of the Spit and Chicklets podcast. And this is a guy that does a number of things around the NHL and doesn't seem to be winding down his creativity anytime soon. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite. This guy's a... You and I have talked about players post-career and how they transition and what they want to do, and how right now, in a lot of ways, it's a blank canvas for a lot of these guys, because a lot of things in sports, when it comes to athletes' personalities, specifically in hockey, hasn't been tried yet, but Paul Bissonnette is.
Not only is he trying it, he's basically jumping off the CN Tower with it.
Yes.
You know, he's going to a further level than anybody has really tried before. And, you know, Whitney and obviously R.A. and Grinnelli are big parts of that. I think their podcast is great. I look at things that they do and I'm like, there's no way we could get away with that.
Oh.
I know there's people who are impatient about hockey and the conservative nature of the sport. The line is moving. It may not get there as fast as people want it to, but the line is definitely moving. And I think there are players out there who like to see this kind of trailblazing nature. They want to know that there will be a time when they can do this and they will be accepted for it. And Roberto Luongo was one of the guys who did that the first time.
On Twitter.
And now these guys are doing it. Bissonnette and Whitney as ex-players leading the way in the podcast version. And I think there are players who are happy to see that this is being received the way it is successfully.
Wonderful guy, wonderful personality. Love this conversation. But if you are sensitive to foul language, please be warned. It is sprinkled liberally throughout the podcast you're about to hear. So if you have sensitive ears, or anyone you're with right now has sensitive ears, or if you're in charge of that person and you don't want them to hear these words, and we all know what we're talking about here, listener beware.
As Almel, our producer, said, as the interview got on, Bissonnette got a lot more comfortable.
The tongue became much more relaxed. He took it out of the holster. Here's Paul Bissonnette on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Pleased to be joined now by, how do we phrase this, Elliot? Podcasts Unite, Podcast Invasion of Spit and Chicklets. How do we introduce someone like Paul Bissonnette? Paul, if you were me, or if I were RA, how would I introduce you right now?
Oh, man, I don't know. We kind of all suck at the intros. I'd say RA and Wit are far superior to me. We did Ray Ferraro on yesterday, and I butchered it on the intro. I had to take two every time. I get so nervous. It's like I'm going out there for a game.
It's funny because normally you come on, the first thing you say on the podcast is, how about the Coyotes won big last night, still competing, still trying hard. But the question I have for you is, when did you decide during your career that you were going to turn your post-hockey life into like a media superstar and do it in a way that no NHLer has ever done it before?
Well, I mean, I think it became successful because it was organic. I don't know if you guys just know the story. I was pretty anti-Twitter, and then Scotty Upshaw kept talking me into it. He's like, come on, man. Got to get on there. And then finally I joined, and, you know, obviously I kind of just say what I want to say. Mm-hmm. It was a lot more aggressive in the early days.
Well, I remember you were fighting with people.
Oh, yeah. We'd go at people all day. I still do sometimes. I do it far less now because it's exhausting. But back then I was just sitting on the couch after training or practice. So I'd be like, all right, let's go here. Let's ding, ding, ding.
So who had the most issue with it? Because, well, I was always told that Don Maloney really wasn't a fan.
See, I wouldn't say he wasn't a fan. I think he was aware that maybe the attention that the Coyotes were getting was a positive thing, especially in the midst of them trying to find an owner and the team started doing better and like whatever. Fans were embracing it, right? Yeah. And that was obvious by the numbers. I mean, some people were probably a little more traditional where they're like, what is this guy doing? This is insane, the fact that this guy is attached to an NHL team and tweeting this stuff out. But my agent told me to gas it.
Your agent did? Your agent said that's it?
Yeah, he's the one who he goes, nothing good can come of this, because I was after the Kovalchuk comment, and I shut it down. And then the team...
What did you say about Kovalchuk?
I said, sorry, when he got his deal shut down, I said, sorry, communist, back to the Soviet. It was the beginning of the PC culture, so I was like, ah, whatever, I'll come off my stance, I'm sorry, whatever. Ended up deleting it. And then all the team was getting a bunch of emails. Like, why would you guys make him delete his account? And like, they're like, what account? We didn't even really know we had a Twitter. What is this? Mm-hmm. So then they're like, hey, can you launch one back up? And when we get to training camp, and then we did that, but it was going to be monitored by Rich Nair. And there was a few times I did get called in the office to get pee-pee whacked, but hey, take the good with the bad, right?
But when did this start to take off? Because now you've created an empire out of this.
I kind of shifted it where, you know, obviously I had the following, so I had a lot of people at my fingertips, but I mean, I was kind of a one trick pony in regards to the fact that all I did was tweet. Well, yeah. Then I started doing Instagram, and sometimes I would do like funny profiles of guys I was playing with where I would like rip them apart and chirp them. And then as soon as I retired, I reached out to my friend here, Posh, who was actually here, mm-hmm. and I said, we need to make a splash. And then we ended up doing that Biz Does BC. Well, that's all she wrote for me. My illustrious hockey career has come to an end. Look, when you carry multiple organizations on your back over the course of a decade, the body tends to fall apart. Just last year, I tore both my ACLs and played on them. For those keeping score at home, that's one more than Joe Thornton ever played on. I hang up the skates, having accomplished everything there is to accomplish in the sport, with my sights set on a new conquest, the world of media. And what better way to start my new career than with a documentary on a place that's grown very close to my heart. A stunningly beautiful province. A melting pot of so many great cultures, backgrounds, and heritage. A place where everyone is accepted, regardless of your skin color or creed. A symbol of diversity. And everyone is fit, too. There are more fitness studios here per capita than anywhere in the world. Everyone seems to run, hike, and even do yoga. And everyone seems so happy, which is weird because it's so fucking expensive. Anyway, the greenery would blow your mind away if the oceans and mountains had already left your jaw on the floor. Yes, I'm talking about beautiful British Columbia. This is Biz Nasty Does BC. Now, it was nothing like earth-shattering as far as the film industry is concerned, but it was, you know, the first time a hockey player really pushed content on his own like that.
I remember somebody texted me and they said, you have got to watch Paul Bissonnette's Ice Bucket Challenge.
This is Ankle Bender Biz Nasty accepting Keith Yandel's ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, except we're going to do it with glacier water. I'd like to nominate LeBron James, the best quarterback in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson for the next challenger.
That was when somebody in the league actually said to me, you've got to watch this thing, and you've got to see that this guy has a chance to do something special.
Yeah, and I'm not really polished like a lot of guys. Like, we had Ray Ferraro.
But that's good. That's
yes.
part of it.
Yeah, and like you guys are so professional. Like, if you listen to our, well, more so than what I would be and would ever be. You know, I'm a little rough around the edges. I swear when I talk, and if you listen to our podcast, you'll know that. But, you know, I think that people can relate. So mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's kind of helps my in. I'm like your everyday guy who somehow mustered out a 12-year pro career and then transitioned it into this. And, you know, I'm hungry for it. I like entertaining people.
So I've always described my career because I wasn't trained for any of this. Like, I went to school for English and philosophy, thought I was going to be a prof and walk the groves of academia
like
and conference hop. And right. So that's what I thought I was going to do. And Elliot knew me when I first started. I was 23 years old, punk attitude, all of that stuff. Right. Never thought I'd end up doing this. So I describe my career as an accidental career. I've somehow...
Organic.
I guess so, maybe. How would you describe yours? Like, how would you describe how you got to being right here, right now?
putting myself out there. I was, especially on the, once the career had ended, that, I mean, that, that shoot we did where we did the Biz Nasty Does BC, and then also pushing any type of content. I mean, like, you know, you're going to take your lumps. Sometimes you're going to do things where people are like, yeah, that was cringy, and you didn't execute to what you thought it was going to be. But I don't really care when people are negative about it. I'm more so like, buddy, you try it. I mean, you know, some days you have your good days and bad days, whether it's on the podcast, just like a player would.
Yep.
And you're going to hear criticism online, but it's the people who are like, but if you think your comment's going to knock me off my path, you're high off your rocker. I'll keep swinging for the fences.
You watched the Masters yesterday, I assume, right? And, you know, I was watching that, and this year, like college basketball too. So there's two things. Last year, Virginia becomes the first team ever to lose as a 16-1. And this year, like, so many people were so happy for them that they won the championship because they got knocked to the bottom and they crawled their way back out. I think there's a lot of that with Tiger Woods. Like, he got knocked to the bottom. His family life got exposed in a very embarrassing fashion.
Very.
But now that he's climbed his way back up, I think people respect that. And they respect that people will take their chances. And whether it works out or not, if you keep battling and you climb, people respect that. And I think that's what they see with what you've kind of done.
Yeah, I mean, wow. I mean, the Tiger Woods comparison is, I mean.
Yeah, I know. It's like not exactly
the same.
You're going
to make people hate me for that. What are you doing? Can we edit that?
I'm just talking about like when you fail, but you're willing to accept it and go. I think people respect that.
People message me all the time on there like, oh, you have any advice? I'm like, but just do it. Go do it. And you're gonna fail, and people aren't gonna like it, but you're gonna end up finding your home, where whether it's, you know, 10,000 people listen to your podcast or a million or whatever. I mean, just keep swinging.
I remember talking to Whit. We were working the World Cup of Hockey, okay, at the Air Canada Centre, now Scotiabank Arena, and I remember talking to Whit and Colby about the failings of this industry in broadcasting. And I was trying to make the point with Whit that one of the things we've always done in hockey media is we've had two players on a panel, but they've put someone like me or Elliot in between them.
Yeah, drive the bus.
Right? And I always said, Whit, if you can just like find the right two hockey players to do a podcast together where, and I know RA is there to host and direct, but the minute you get two hockey players talking to each other, that's gold.
Oh.
Because we never get a chance, listeners, viewers, never get a chance to hear players talking to each other.
Yeah.
And I've always felt that's one of the geniuses of Chicklets, is this is two players, you and Whit, talking to each other, and it's that little peek behind the curtain that no one really gets a chance to see or hear.
Yeah, and some fans don't like it for the aspect of we're always very lenient towards the players aspect. Like, we're empathetic towards what these guys are going through because we have. So we're not telling you to think a certain way. We're just giving you the player's perspective on what may have been going on psychologically in that aspect of whatever the situation may be.
Could you do that when you were still playing? Like, is there any chance that we'll ever see players able to do that while they're still playing?
I mean, I would say in the future, I mean, and it's inevitable, right? I mean, you see guys, more and more guys starting Instagram, more and more guys getting comfortable just, you know, wearing whatever it is they wear, like whether it be a hype beast or a guy like a PK Subban.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Guys are starting to come out the box and understand that, like, a lot of people were negative about the Twitter. Let's go back there and kind of were like shutting it down. And I was like, but this career is not going to last me much longer. Like, are you going to pay my bills? Like, I want to see where I can take this. And so are these guys. Like PK, once he's done playing, he's already set himself up for life. He's probably going to be the next Don Cherry. I mean, he's a face of hockey.
He's going to do whatever he wants.
I think more specifically, though, I think maybe to your question, Elliot, is from a media point of view, outside of outside interest, like, to do what you're doing with media while you're playing. I remember years ago, Jello Biafra once said, don't fear the media, be the media.
Yeah.
And that's what people are, how you, you know, yourself and Whit do that post-career. What about while you're playing? Is there a chance two hockey players on Team X could do what you're doing while they're still playing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't really answer your question the last time. I said maybe in the future. It would be tough for me to say yeah. Like, I mean, imagine like Kadri you know, Nylander
right?
having a podcast right now and explaining what's going on in a playoff series. I don't think a team would be okay with that either, but I never thought a team would be okay with guys playing basketball after games. And, you know, that's not a jab, by the way, at the Carolina Hurricanes. I really like what they've done, and, you know, they're growing the game down there.
So I've heard that there have been times when you guys get a guest on your podcast, the teams will reach out and say, okay, don't embarrass us or anything like that.
Well, most of the time I just tell the PR guys, hey, we'll just give you editing rights. If there's anything you felt uncomfortable with in there, just take it out.
So you'll send it to them in advance?
We're not in this to hurt anyone.
Yeah.
That's like the one thing is, like, it's not worth to us to lose a friendship and an end to maybe other interviews for something that a guy might create a shit storm, so to speak. Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah, that's fine. We're good.
Really?
We've done it. Yeah, we've done it. We don't make a huge habit of it, but we've done it.
I mean, I don't feel comfortable being on a podcast without dropping a few F-bombs. It's kind of my staple.
We want you to feel comfortable here.
Can you tell, like, which team was the most nervous? Like, who was the most nervous?
I would probably say Austin Matthews.
I heard that.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that. I don't want this guy dealing with things before the season starts because, you know, he might have said the wrong thing on the podcast that people are going to blow away out of proportion. Mm-hmm. That sucks. And it's crazy because I feel like a lot of media might ruin it for themselves. Because they put out these clickbait headlines and all of a sudden there's a shitstorm over nothing where it's just like, well, no wonder these guys don't give you anything. You're making a big deal out of nothing.
I agree with that.
Along the way up, going back to Junior Hockey, American League, NHL, is there anyone you could have seen doing what you're doing now? Anyone had the personality, the charisma, all of it?
It's funny you ask that because a lot of guys, tons of guys. But the problem is like they're like they're nervous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're taking a leap here that people might not like what you're putting out there. And we talked about it earlier. Oh man, there are so many funny guys. Like, I know Keith Yandel. People are aware of it because he felt comfortable on our channel.
Yeah.
Man, the funniest guy I ever played with. And he could probably have his own podcast. By the time he's done, he's going to have enough money to burn it.
Yeah, he'll also be able to do whatever he wants.
I think
wants.
He's going
to
be over 100 by the time he's done.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys just don't want to do it. They don't want to put themselves out there.
You know a lot of these players that are still in the game. Who's the funniest guy in the game right now that no one would even suspect is hilarious?
Well,
like the guy when he does his walk-offs, like, man, you're cardboard. Like, you're vanilla cake with mayonnaise frosting. Like, give us something here. You're funnier than this. You're more entertaining than this.
Oh, who have come on the podcast?
Come on the podcast. Or you know personally that you can say to yourself, you know what? His stand-ups in the intermissions are one thing, but that's not really him. The guy that I know is a lot funnier. Who are those guys in the NHL that you look at and you say to yourself, this guy's faking the funk. I know this guy's a lot funnier.
I mean, from what I've heard, like, I mean, I think slowly Jonathan Toews is coming out of his shell.
Yeah.
And I feel like younger in their careers, they get a little nervous too. But once they've established themselves and you've won three cups
and you're making
$10 million, things become a little bit less serious. I mean, and let's go back towards Tiger Woods. I don't know anyone specifically where I could name just like that. But I mean, you think of a guy like Tiger Woods, how much more likable is he now that he's just kind of like he's being himself, you know, he's kind of embracing everything where before he's just trying to hold this like hard image. It was lame. I respected his winning ability back then, but I was always just hoping he would just open up and crack a smile and stop taking himself too seriously.
You know who I've heard is a lot like funnier than he lets on is Patrice Bergeron.
See, I don't know him well enough, and there's a prime example, whereas if that's the case, not even I know that.
A couple of the Boston guys have told me that there's a guy there who when he decides he wants to let it go a bit, he's pretty funny. But I don't know that for sure. I was just told that secondhand.
I'm going to come back to that question because I'm trying to think as we go here.
Now, the Coyotes, they ever say, like with your crossover and stuff, like you did the pillow talk this year with Tyson Nash, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, it was just silly, you know?
But it was funny. Like, I'm looking at it.
Why are these guys in beds next to each other? What the heck is going
on
here?
It's just funny. Like, I'm looking at this visual and saying, who thinks of this? It's hilarious.
Hello, Coyotes fans. Welcome to Pillow Talk with Biz and Nasher. You know, me and Nasher miss the old times of taking pregame naps after pregame meal and really the player lifestyle. So we decided to check into a local hotel and, you know, get back to the old times. Well, Nasher, I guess that brings me back to the whole idea of this show is when I was playing with the Coyotes.
I thought of the pillow talk idea.
That was your idea? If I said it was terrible, would you have said it was Tyson Nash's idea?
No, no.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't offend me. Are you kidding me? Read my DMs.
Do the Coyotes ever worry about any of the crossover, something that's said on Spitting Chicklets affecting you with the Coyotes or anything like that?
Well, I wanted to establish the Coyotes gig first, and then I hopped on the podcast, and surprisingly, they haven't said anything, but I think that they know that I'm picking that over Coyotes because, and that's not a shot at the Coyotes either. I'm not polished, and we talked about that. My outlet is Spitting Chicklets. That's where I get to be myself, and for that reason, I think it's grown to the size it has, and I have full creative control. The most exhausting thing is working with corporate brands, although, you know, it's nice too, and it's the money's a little bit easier, is I don't have someone telling me, I watch what you say there, or I think we got to change that up. It's just, it's exhausting. There's people who don't want to be told what's funny anymore, and there's a market for it, and we're in it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You're one of their best ambassadors too. Like, you always talk them up on the podcast. So I can't see it being a problem for them at all.
No. And if it ever became a problem, they could come to me and let me know. But I'm not in this to hurt anyone. I'm just being myself. And if that upset them, I would be totally okay with that. I'd say, hey, I respect your decision. I understand that you're looking out for your best interest as a company and an organization. And I would have no problem getting canned.
You know, the thing too is it's growing, Paul. Like, the NHL is starting to use you now in some events. I laughed my head off at the tour this year with the What's in the Box.
Yeah, that was good. That was their idea.
So that was their idea?
They thought of it. It had already been done before. And I'm like, okay, that's a cool concept. Wasn't sure how crazy the guys were going to be about it.
They played along. They were good.
Yeah.
They were nervous. Like, you could tell they were really nervous about it.
By day two, I think a few of them had caught wind, so we weren't able to use that footage. But we were planning on actually putting them in the box, but then the NHL was like, could you imagine Austin Matthews gets bit by a lizard and he gets an infection and he's unable to play the start of the season? Hey, I wouldn't be able to walk the streets of Toronto.
Matthews, out for the year, Komodo dragon bite.
Yeah, bullfrog fungus infection.
The most creative press release ever.
But yeah. like I'm curious, like, what's your goals here, Paul? Like, where do you want this to take you?
My main objective in my post-hockey career is to show fans the lighter side of these guys as much as possible. That's why I did that little show. So that show, I mean, we wrote a script assuming guys would hop in, and we kind of had to give them, yo, this is what you are as a character. We need you. Some guys were themselves. Some guys were kind of playing characters. And, I mean, I think fans liked it because they're like, man, these hockey guys are acting. This is ridiculous. They suck. They're terrible, but it's kind of funny.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good, though.
Right. So I want to do another one and start expanding the roles, bigger production.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, fans spend a lot of money to watch these guys play. And my dad worked at a steel mill, and he worked hard for his money. And I know what it costs to go to hockey games. And, you know, I want to give these guys as much entertainment as they deserve, because I got to benefit from those ticket sales and what the NHL pays, right? So that's like, I kind of want to give a gift to all the hardcore fans out there.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your career as well. And I remember talking to Brad May once, and I said, Mayday, which one team did you always want to play for, but you never had a shot to? And he said, I always saw myself somewhere down the road in a Bruins jersey. It just felt like I should one day play for the Bruins. And for whatever reason, he never ended up obviously playing for the Bruins. Is there a team that you always wanted to play for? Going back to when you were a kid and you first laced them up and you always had your head, wow, what it would be like to pull that sweater over my head?
Yeah, cliche answer would be Leafs, but that's who it would be.
Well, you're from around here.
Also, when I was picked up by waivers by Phoenix, three teams put in a claim. Minnesota, Toronto, and Phoenix. And Phoenix had finished the worst of those three teams, so they got to claim me the year that I got picked up after I got sent down in training camp by Pittsburgh. It was my fourth year, so I was past entry level, so I had to clear waivers. And they snagged me. And, I mean, Toronto would have been cool, although I did have a good memory in Toronto. The first game that my dad had ever seen me play, I ended up scoring the game winner against the Leafs.
Nice.
Keith Yandle with a wrist shot. He scores! Bissonnette was screening in front. I don't know if he got a piece of that, but he is celebrating the fact that the Coyotes now have a 4-1 lead.
That is second of the season. with his dad in the house.
Oh, is that unbelievable? First time his dad has seen him play live in an NHL game.
Articulate your emotions right now.
I just want to thank Tony Silva for training me when I'm out of the lineup, my personal trainer.
Yeah.
No, but it's pretty cool. I got to fly my dad out to more games, I guess.
So my mother was sick at the time, so she was unable to attend the game. Crazy enough, Buffalo would be my other answer because that's even closer to home.
Sure.
And I went to a lot of games there. My dad would take me there instead. It was a lot cheaper, of course, at the old Odd.
Great place to watch games.
Also, my grandparents had never seen me play an NHL game, too. So my dad had already been. So my mom and grandparents come to the game in Buffalo. Sure as shit, I scored the fucking game winner in that one, too.
That's walk. Rebound. They score. Cleared into the net as Hansel let it go, I believe.
Bissonnette,
I beg your pardon, number 12, Paul Bissonnette. And Phoenix has its second lead of the night.
That's awesome.
And my grandparents were along the glass on the other side. So when I was given the knuckles past the line, I ended up going to the corner and I gave her the old knuckles to my grandpa. He passed away. He's gone now. Rest in peace. He did a lot for me, you know, driving me to practices and whatever. But 7 NHL goals in my career and 2 game winners.
That's awesome. It's
kind of cool, right?
I'm always curious about tough hockey players and the idea of fear. I remember talking to PJ Stock once. I'm like, of all those guys you ever peached, you know, fought, like, you know, who scared you? And he said, oh, yeah, Rob Ray. Rob Ray, those eyes and all, so tough. Fear is a difficult thing sometimes for athletes to talk about. But who were you scared of? And did anyone ever scare you?
I was nervous every pregame nap because I knew I had to fight. So I was always nervous and scared going into games because you never know. That could be the one punch that ends it all. Colton Orr was just one of those guys that scared me. He always had a good game face. You never see him really joking around. And he just had that look where I'm going to handle business. And then I don't know how much truth to this is, but I believe he had a metal plate put in his face and his hand because of all the fighting, and I think he cracked his orbital bone. So he was essentially like the Terminator, at least in my head. This could all be fabricated in my own mind. So I don't know, in fact, if he does have a plate in his head and hand. And he just had that knockout power where he always gets his punches through. So he was definitely one. Eric Goddard was a guy that I played with in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about this guy enough. You see him with
a
shirt.
Big man.
You see him with his shirt off, though. He wasn't jacked. He was just long.
Really, eh?
He was just long, and he just stood in there, and he threw. Thankfully, I was his roommate because I made the NHL, and he was in Pittsburgh at the time, so I didn't have to fight him. Those are the two off the top of my head. You know, I fought Peros. Is there anyone that you maybe could chime in with that I might be forgetting?
I don't, you know.
Chris Neal always seemed like a pretty tough guy to me, that I would have an issue.
You never fought Ryan Reeves, right? Like
I fought Ryan Reeves twice.
Like, because I watched him against Kane the other night, and like those are two tough guys who both are unafraid. Like the thing that really stood out to me was how they were smiling at each other after that was over.
I wouldn't want to fight either of those guys.
But the thing about Reeves, though, too, in that fight, he's smiling while it's going on. Like there are a few guys that I know or I've ever talked to, and Tony Twist is top of that list, who loved everything about it.
He's hungry for. I liked doing it more when I was sticking up for teammates. Yeah. That's when the switch would hit where I'm like, I don't care if I get hit, I'm going to hurt.
Yeah.
I fought Ryan Reeves when he just broke into the NHL. I would say I got slight advantage on that one. He ended up beating me up the next time. But what's crazy about him is he's progressively gotten hungrier for it, and you can tell by how he fights still. And in that Kane fight, he was swinging so hard, and yet it was so controlled.
Yeah. That guy would terrify me. If I had to do that job, I would be terrified by that guy.
Yeah, and if he connects with one of those, he's a massive human being. We did the fitness testing when I was at St. Louis's camp the one year, and this guy was bench pressing like 305, like it was nothing. And we're all sitting around like, this guy's going to hurt someone. But credit to Kane for standing in there. Kane's got that switch, too. He doesn't get pushed over.
Oh, no. He's tough. Like,
he's tough.
He is a tough guy.
Remember he fought 3 times in one game when he was in Buffalo?
Yes.
And he beat someone up, and he was just like, okay, this guy's a gamer.
One of the reasons you were such a successful teammate is because you knew how to keep guys loose. And what's your favorite story of maybe just like guys having a rough time or the team's having a rough time and I'm going to do something? And not only was it funny, but it worked.
Maybe not at the NHL level, but when I was in the Calder Cup year, of when I was in Manchester.
Manchester, yeah.
Yeah, I was just, you know, we didn't lose many games and we didn't go through many tough spurts, but we were a team that really knew how to deal with adversity. Like, we would turn it around pretty quick. Basically the opposite of Tampa right now. Quick job there. Can't wait to hear from you Lightning fans. I would dance naked and like really get in the guys who were serious face to get the room. And even they would just crack a smile. Like Jordan Wheel was one guy who was there. He ended up being playoff MVP that year. And, you know, he's in a routine before games. He does meditation and he's got his whole thing. And, you know, sometimes just go by him and just ask him if he's got any clear tape. And
hang on. Were you the guy that was most comfortable being naked in every room you were in?
Oh, yeah.
There's always that one guy who's just way too comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, I'm one of those guys for sure. There's some guys really biz, throw some clothes on. Like, because I'll come up and like put the leg on the bench and be talking. I'm just like playing with my nuts, being like, how, you know, how's the PP doing? I saw you guys talking there after practice, you know, and they're like, Jesus, dude. You know, they don't want to catch anything and bring it home to their wives. I would say the jester aspect was always something I embraced, especially after I transitioned from actually being somewhat of a player mm-hmm. to a fighter. Mm-hmm. That was an overnight decision because mm-hmm. it was presented to me when I was in the Pittsburgh organization when I just gotten called up from the East Coast to the AHL. And they said, we're going to put you at fourth line. And I said, I know what that means. And then I said, are you going to do it or are you not? And that's when I started fighting, right? Mm-hmm. So at that point, you're playing 5 to 7 minutes a game. Well, you got to bring another element.
Sure.
Be a good teammate. Go get them a water if they need a water. Like after game, hand out protein shakes. And a lot of guys are just like the egos take over where they think they're too good for something. Mm-hmm. That decision got me 5 years, 5.5 years in the NHL.
And a lot of good connections for after. Like people 100%. Remember the
yeah,
guys
but
who
I was
like
buddies
that.
With everyone. I yeah. mean, like if a guy, I had a pickup truck. If a guy needed help moving, they could have called me. I would have helped him move. Yeah. I helped Yans move one time. But that's just the kind of guy I was. And if guys needed like a table reservation or something, I was doing it. I was lining up other teams' rookie parties when I was in Scottsdale. 1 year I had 3 or 4 of them. And then afterward, we go to Gretzky's place.
Oh, yeah.
Because Gretzky had bought a place near Old Town and his kids were going to ASU and the market was down. So he's like, I'm not taking a bath on this. I don't need to sell it. So his kid, both of his kids and Joey Superstein, another one of my buddies, was living at this fucking mansion. And we would go there for after hours all the time. And I tell you what, I was batting 1,000. It was insane the things. I had Tom Green over there one night. He was singing acoustic guitar.
What?
Oh, yeah. I was, I mean, I hope Wayno doesn't get pissed off, but I used the bidet in his bathroom. Like, I used Wayne Gretzky's bidet. I drank out of it. Thanks, Wayno.
The champagne or just water?
Fountain of youth.
Yeah.
That's where it's at if you people are wondering.
Back to the scrapping for a second, off of the Gretzky bidet story. You were never shy about it before, and I've always wanted to ask you about this one, going back to when you played junior hockey. Now in the CHL Top Prospects game, it's a no-hitter. Sure, there's maybe a little bit of physicality. Never a fight anymore. But what's the backstory on you and Dion Phaneuf?
Backstory was that the 85 draft class were just simply a group of gamers. Like, look at that draft.
Yeah.
Just a lot of winners involved. Getzlaff, Perry, they have a cup. I know they're not playing up to what they used to be now, but Jeff Carter, Mike Richards,
Giroux,
the list goes on. It is crazy.
Giroux, yeah.
And in that prospects game, like, guys were there to play. And there was a lot of people who still trying to like advance in the draft and stuff like that. And Dion Phaneuf absolutely clobbered Marc-Antoine Pouliot.
Ready for a good finish. Phaneuf absolutely leveled his man at center ice.
Laid him out.
Ferrano scores! And now there's going to be a fight. Bizanet and Phaneuf, who threw that huge hit on Pouliot.
And I was always that type of player where I loved sticking up for teammates, even when I was a defenseman in my junior days. And as soon as he lit him up, I just went right over. They ended up going back
for the longest
way.
Time, too. Guys would like line it up beforehand. Like, you knew going in, like, okay, Matt Dumba is going to fight this guy in the Kelowna prospects game. Duncan Seaman's going to fight this guy in the...
Oh, come on. This was actually happening in other prospects games?
Oh, going
you
away.
Would know.
Going away. You knew who was going to... There was always the invitation that morning.
Which is fair, and I didn't know that, but like every scout's there. And I mean, it used to be like that. I mean, I feel like everything has just gotten softer as far as the sport's concerned. I don't know what the side of the fence you guys are on about it, but that was a man's game, and guys wanted to fight for draft positioning at that game, and not the whole all-star mentality.
Because you went at him hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember that game well.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, he killed Marc-Antoine Pouliot. And mind you, we'd played under 18 that summer before. We were buddies. We were hanging out every day at under 18. Like, me, him, and Jamie Tardif and BJ Crombie were inseparable. I'm sure you heard the story on the Spit and Chicklets podcast. So I was the only one using wood sticks still at the under 18. We go to Piešťany, Slovakia, and we have our first practice over there. And, you know, I'm wheeling down. I take a shot. My stick breaks. And I'm like, oh, geez, you know, that sucks because I only have probably 8 to 9 on the trip. Well, I go grab another one. I'm skating around, shoot another one. Stick breaks again. And I kind of look around, and all the guys are chuckling. And Dion Phaneuf's got the biggest chuckle going.
Oh, so they sawed them, eh?
Dion Phaneuf sawed two of my wooden sticks just to mess with me. And I was so pissed. But, you know, not pissed where like, yeah. it created a rift to where, like, it created morale. The boys rallied around it, right? So sure as shit, I finished the tournament with one stick and then one extra. Well, I look at the bus as we're leaving after the gold medal game, after we just win. Everyone's in a good mood. And all I hear is Deion say, hey, Biz, that girl looks like she's got one of your sticks. And I look out the window. Sure as shit, he'd went in the stick bag and gave away my sticks to this girl. So I had no sticks leaving Piešťany, Slovakia. So that just describes the relationship I have with Dion Phaneuf, which was weird because when he stepped in the league, a lot of people, even when he got with the Leafs, a lot of people just, you know, they don't like him because they probably think he takes himself too seriously. But behind closed doors, there's your example.
That's the guy.
There's your example. Organically, it came out. Dion Phaneuf is such a funny guy, great teammate. One of those funny vets that really likes to get on the young guys, but not to get on them, but just to make them feel like they're a part of the team.
Who are your best friends? Like, who are your best friends in the game?
Keith Yandle is one of them. I talk to Shane Doan quite a bit. Shane Doan is he helps balance me off because sometimes he'll call and say and give me advice about certain things where he's like, hey, I'm just giving it to you from this perspective just to give you a heads up. So I really appreciate Doner's friendship. Obviously, Witt.
Yep.
Brooks Orpik. The problem is so many guys are in all these different places and I'm so busy now. I don't keep up with friends as much as possible. Boyd Gordon was a very good friend of mine.
Well, it's so funny because like, we used to talk, like, he would not say 8 words to us.
He's dark. But he couldn't be public with his sense of humor because, you know, people are so sensitive nowadays. But Boyd Gordon, just a wonderful human being. And, him and Yans would go at it sometimes and Yans would get him riled up. But, I mean, Gordon was the ultimate teammate. Have you ever seen this guy block shots?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
He was like Jarmelson, but he was the forward guy, so he was eating them closer. Yeah. And he put his body on the line every game. So he was one guy for sure I gravitated towards.
Okay, finish this sentence. The one thing people don't understand about Sean Avery is blank.
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I think that he's the Grinch. Sean Avery's the Grinch. There's a heart in there. I think early on he got positive reinforcement from the fact that he was being like negative and mean and a bit of a circus. So anytime that you get positive reinforcement when you're doing something, you kind of keep running with it because you know that's now becomes your persona. And I don't think he cares. I would say that he's blackballed himself from a lot of things because people know him as that evil human being. What I try to do with that piece that I did with Spit and Chicklets was just kind of show the lighter side of him. And he's a different human, and some of the things that he says I don't agree with. But one thing I do respect about him is that he'll speak his mind, and he doesn't hold back, and it's refreshing sometimes to hear that. It is. It's polarizing. I think that's why people gravitate towards him. Mm-hmm. Well, love him or hate him, right?
I think people have, I don't know if respect is the right word or appreciation is the right word, but people who say things that they feel they can't. And he clearly feels that he doesn't care what you think about him one way or the other. And it's hard for most people to be in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's maybe a bit of resentment where the hate comes from. The financial freedom is the ultimate goal for anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, once I hit my number, see you later. I don't care what anyone says about me. I'll be off the grid.
How close are you to that?
I'm not close right now. I'd like to I have a number in mind. I think by the time I'm 40, I could get to it. But that's the only thing I do right now is I just work to get to that number.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, then if, you know, maybe just do the podcast. I don't got to stress myself out. And then maybe work on some other projects where, you know, I don't have to, I wouldn't say sell out, but, you know, make money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so right now in this room where we're doing this, if you're just listening at Apple Podcasts or at Sportsnet.ca, we're in the ice surfing room. Use this room for playoff coverage as well. On the wall behind you, there's a picture of Mike Bossy with Wayne Gretzky. Above there, there's Mario Lemieux with his famous move on John Casey. You have Lanny McDonald holding the cup. Over there is Mark Messier and Wayne Gretzky as well. If Paul Bissonnette redesigned this room to make himself comfortable with visions from the past and iconic hockey players that you always admired, jerseys, all of it, if you made the hockey den that this is sort of fashioned after, who would be on the walls?
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with the ones that are already up there. I don't know what made me think of this. I mean, I feel like you're kind of baiting me to say a bunch of plugs and fourth line fighters.
No, listen, if it were me, I'd have like, you know, a picture of Gump Worsley. There'd be like Mike Palm. It would be like guys that aren't of that superstar ilk.
My prediction is that it's nothing we're even thinking about here. Like, you would do something totally different.
Well, yeah, I feel like I need an entertaining answer. That's what you guys are expecting.
I just want just an honest answer.
You know, maybe some pictures of those old cards of weird uniforms, like the Seals, where you have like a guy with like Harry Dick as a name. You know, those traditional names that people laugh at now. Maybe some signed sticks from a bunch of no-namers.
Yeah.
Like Danny Heatley. I told the Danny Heatley story on the podcast as well, how he used to ask all the fourth liners and fighters for signed sticks.
So good.
Which is funny because everyone always used to ask all the skill guys. So he made us feel important. So maybe a shrine to all the plugs and the no. I mean, let's be realistic. If I wouldn't have had Twitter, nobody knew who the fuck I was. I'd be one of those people on the wall.
So here's my last question for you. I have admiration for what you've done.
I appreciate that. It means a lot. Both of you guys.
You've created something where a lot of people were either unwilling or afraid to go, and it works for you. And I think that the NHL needs that. As you mentioned, you lasted 5 years longer in your career because you were willing to be that teammate that was always willing to help out. Who would be the person that if they walked up to you and said, Paul, I really admire what you've done? Who would be that person that you would say, like, wow, I'm so glad to hear that from you?
Well, I mean, hearing it from all the media members is special to me. And now coming on this side of the industry, you gain a lot of respect for what you guys do. And it's weird because, like, sometimes I would be a little critical of maybe people on television if they weren't so great. Whereas now I'm like, man, like, who the fuck was I to say anything? Like, I'm stumbling all over my words. This is way harder than it looks. So anytime any media member comes up and kind of acknowledges me as one of their own now is kind of like a tip of the cap. And I take that big time, like, to heart, and I love it.
But there's got to be like a former player or someone that you would love to hear that from.
Yeah, like a lot of the guys come up now and you know, I think they're like, damn, like, how do I maybe start getting involved a little bit in that? And that's why we implemented Teddy Purcell. And part of my goal also moving forward that I didn't mention is I want to expand Chicklets to maybe where we're on more, where it becomes its own network. Because a guy like Shane O'Brien, I feel, would be great.
Yes.
Whereas he's a guy who doesn't need a filter. And when he's saying what he needs to say, it comes off better. Scotty Upshaw and there's that kind of crew we have, a guy, Dustin Penner. Mm-hmm. You know, I think LA would be the spot for it because there's a lot of guys out there. But going back to your question, yeah, I just, all you guys, and I respect what you guys have done, and I appreciate all you guys reaching out when you do to congratulate me on making the steps.
Watching you has been a lot of fun. Like, through the career, all the stuff on Twitter, post-career has been outstanding. Sometimes it's forest for the trees and you don't understand it until you pull yourself back or you're not in it anymore. Do you understand how impactful you've been? Like, do you get a sense, Paul Bissonnette, of who you are in this game, who you are in media right now, and what you're doing to move this game forward and make it a more personality-based shine on people that have had a hard time expressing themselves? Like, do you get a sense of how big you are in this industry? Maybe a weird question to ask because you're in the middle of it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's tough to not sound conceited when you answer it. You know, the feedback is what's kept it going, where I want to do more and more and more. I mentioned earlier, like, I love to entertain. I want people to watch a clip or a 10-minute video and maybe get outside their lives and get away from what was bugging them or what they were miserable about and just have them enjoy that period of time. And as I've slowly done it, the feedback is what's kept me going. So yeah, like when I get stopped on the street, it's a comforting feeling. It's like, you know, we're changing the culture a little bit. We're trying to make hockey more interesting and bring it outside the box of where it's been for a long period of time. That's why when like Don Cherry, which is weird because he's kind of made a career off being charismatic and wearing colorful suits and speaking his mind, he kind of likes that old school mentality where, like, you know, speak when spoken to kind of thing. And that's where I'm like, no, like, these guys need to walk in the rink with a big Gucci trench coat on. Like, let's go. If that's them, let's see it. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. You know, obviously, I don't think that I'm as impactful as you're making it out to be, but I appreciate the comments.
You should have answered that by saying, I know I'm a big star, while patting yourself on the shoulder at the same time.
Yeah, but I mean, based on where I want to get, I don't think I'm there yet. Mm. So the bar is higher. And you know, I want to keep pushing the envelope. I want to keep pushing more and more content with all these different crazy weird personalities in the NHL. And the one advantage that we do have with Chicklets is the fact that I was in the locker room with them. And I hope that, you know, the media understand that I'm aware of that advantage. These guys are going to tell me shit and open up to me, and we get to have that camaraderie more so than just some reporter
like
that they
two
don't
doofs
know.
Like us. Yes, we get that.
But I get that. But here's a
players
prime.
Will always look at you differently than they look at us, and I think we understand and respect that. I do.
Sure. But now saying that, and that goes back to the people saying, you know, oh, it might be too hard. Where did you come from? How did you get your start? I'm just using you as an example.
You know what?
One guy where I can sit down in a room now and you basically, like, you were a player and I'm going to be very comfortable with you. You've earned that. That was, it's taken how many years of your life?
You know, Paul, I still don't feel that way. Like, I think the moment you feel that way.
I'm telling you, I'm a player. I feel that way with you guys.
Yeah.
You guys have earned it.
It's very nice of you to say, but I don't think you can ever rest on that. It's like you talked about it earlier. It's like being a player. You're only as good as your last show or your last podcast. If your last podcast stunk, your next one better be good, right? That's the way I kind of look at it. Yes.
I would say another advantage that you guys have is you're usually very fair with your assessments. You guys are level-headed. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to say, you know, this guy has not necessarily been playing great lately, but – like some guys like to come in, like a Milbury, who is another hockey personality who I respect. And I know we've kind of had a little rift in the past, but now that I'm on this side, I'm like, hey, this guy is trying to entertain. That's his opinion, and that's the way he wants to communicate it. Whereas he kind of just like rips on guys and, like, you know, he's pretty out there and pretty firm with his comments, where maybe he won't have that level of respect from other players in an interview that you would. So that, I think, to me, that benefits you when you're doing this type of stuff.
Good to know.
Let me conclude on one, get your thought on one person specifically, and that's R.A. I love this guy. Like, listen, I love Whit. We all love Whit. One of the funniest guys we've ever met and such a gem. R.A., a couple of years ago, he was in town. I brought him in here at Hockey Night, toured him around. We spent the afternoon together having amazing conversations, many of which I can never repeat in front of a microphone, but that's cool.
Yeah, R.A.'s out of control.
Give me your thoughts on R.A. as we conclude, because I love the guy.
And he loves it. You can tell. Like,
oh.
He loves being between you and Whit. It means the world to him.
Yeah, and part of the glory in growing it to where it's been is, you know, you get to take a guy who, you know, he was a beat writer for Barstool, and, you know, he was doing his thing. But now he's like a hockey public figure. This guy, I mean, I don't know, he's a janitor with his real job, right? He's just like an everyday blue-collar Bostonian who loves the Bees. And now he gets to sit in a room with Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. And interview Connor McDavid and stuff, which is funny because, like, even when McDavid was in there, he was pretty fucking banged up. Mm-hmm. He was drunk, and I'm pretty sure he was high on weed. And it's just like, it's unbelievable. Like, this guy is just like, he's out of control. And we went on that tour, the West Coast Wagon Tour, and when he landed in L.A., right away he goes to the weed shop, and he ends up crushing like three edibles before dinner. This guy was sleeping at the table. And this is our kickoff dinner before the biggest week in Chicklets history. So, yeah. And what I love, too, is he's giving the hardcore fan perspective. He's giving the fan who paid good money to go buy a Bees jersey, or even though he's not paying for tickets and he's sneaking in every building in the NHL. This guy's like the fucking Pink Panther.
And he gambles. People understand gambling. He bets.
Oh, he's a degenerate.
Yeah, people understand that.
Yeah, they're gambling like thousands of dollars on games. And I'm thinking, R.A., like, I know what you're making here, and I know what you make as a janitor. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, that there's something really not right with gambling that much on a game. Mm-hmm. All this, saying that, I look over to my degenerate buddy here, Pasha, who has all these prop bets every game, although he does hit some crazy ones sometimes. Like a no-namer getting two goals in a game at 105-1.
Good on you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's nailed a couple. Well, I don't know how he's been doing lately. You know how they only tell you about their wins. But all in all, RA is awesome, and he's also improved as a host.
Totally.
He's getting better. Totally. He's more organized. And over the last like 10 or 12 episodes, he's done an incredible job, especially leading into playoffs. There was a time where he was struggling there, but he was going through some personal stuff, and I'm so happy he got himself out of it, because he deserves it.
We love him. Great guy. And you're a wonderful guy,
thanks
too. Thanks so much for coming
guys,
in.
Good chatting with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Paul. Paul Bissonnette. How do we do the outro? We didn't know how to do an intro. How do we do an outro on Biz?
Goodbye, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Cease and desist from RA.
Thoughts is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first six-function multi-pro tailgate. Net sliding around on the way to pond hockey, use the built-in load stop to help keep them in place. Loading what seems like half a team's worth of bags, the tailgate also turns into a step for easier access and has an inner gate that flips down for unloading all the gear you can fit. GMC Sierra Denali, we are professional grade. Okay, Elliot, that was a lot of fun. We knew it would be fun going in, and Paul Bissonnette is as advertised. And you know what? As much as people may know Paul Bissonnette through his work with the Coyotes, his work on Spittin' Chiclets, anyone that's encountered this guy, anyone that I've ever talked to, and it's not just players as well, they come back from a conversation or experience with him feeling really good. Mm-hmm. He's a charming guy. Like, I know he may be a little bit rough around the edges and have a lot of salt on his tongue, but at the end of all of it, there's a charming guy there. That's the way I've always felt about Bissonnette.
What I see is a guy who's willing to be inclusive. You know, if you look at the guest list for their podcast, there's been stars and there have been guys who haven't been stars.
Yep.
What he wants is he wants you to enjoy things. I mentioned in the podcast, the thing I remember really noticing for the first time was his ice bucket challenge. Yeah. When he took a helicopter and went out into the mountains and basically the tightest bathing suit alive, which was kind of disturbing in its own way to watch.
That bathing suit told no lies.
No, and it had it poured on him. And I just like, I was just like, I laughed. I was like, this doesn't exist. And, you know, in the hockey world. And that's the thing. Like, life is hard. And you have to try to make it as fun as you possibly can. The other thing I really took out of it, and I kind of wish I'd asked him more about it, is he basically wants to hit a number at 40 so that he can semi-retire and do things he considers only fun. I consider that a very worthwhile goal. Mm. You know, I was never like that, and I don't think I ever – it wouldn't have worked for me if I was like that. But I think that people out there should have a plan. Like, I was not made for plans. There were certain things that happened to me younger in life that – I realized that was not for me. But I've seen a lot of people out there who I think have missed their goals or have not achieved what they wanted to achieve because they didn't have a plan. Mm. And when I heard him say that, I said, this all makes sense to me now. He has a road that he is going down. And that is the thing that's most impressive about him, because this is all means to an end.
as well. Big ups to everyone on that podcast. Those are wonderful people. Grinnelli, R.A., Ryan Whitney, just wonderful, wonderful people who do a great job. And just like there's no point in there being anything like this podcast, there's no point in being anything like that podcast. Do your own thing.
Be you.
And that's what those guys do. And more power to them. And we wish them the best of luck. And thank Paul Bissonnette for dropping by our podcast. And we'll leave you with this. Canadian singer-songwriter 10 Kills the Pack. This is Just Want to Feel Whole Again by 10 Kills the Pack on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Take years off the day. Made a choice you thought would be better for the outcome. But your income's no good. You see every sunny day as a walk in the park. You know, drinks and nights to find love are a shot in the dark. And everything is changing. The world shifts when you walk into your old bedroom full of dreams. You didn't pack or take with you to your new apartment that you want to call home. But you're still searching for that something. You just want to feel whole again. You got off work just on time. Grabbed a bottle for the night. You're deprived from your friend because he's seeing a new guy. Saw the news on your screen. Can't believe what you've seen. As you watch from your pillow before you fall fast asleep. And good morning to you. And morning.